morning. My name is Jean Nuyard. I serve as co-district executive for the Unitarian Universalist Churches in New Hampshire and Vermont. And it's wonderful to be here in Nashua this morning and to stand here as a representative, as it were, of the larger circle of Unitarian Universalism. I'd like to begin my comments this morning by telling you a story of an experience I had a couple of years ago when I was visiting in one of our smaller congregations somewhere north of here. It was a small meeting. We sat around a table, and as often happens in such meetings in Unitarian Universalist churches, we began with the question of, what has brought you to this church? Why is this church important in your life? And folks talked about the importance of a liberal religious education for their children, and some talked of how affirming it was to be with like-minded people and to take action in the larger world and that community. And one woman, when it was her turn in the circle, had tears streaming down her cheeks. And she said, "This church saved my life. This church saved my life." Pretty powerful words. And she spoke of her growing up in a very repressive, fundamentalist church, of her coming of age and coming to an awakening that she was a lesbian, and how she had to deny and repress that and be ashamed of it, and how well into her adult years she really had lived a half-life. She didn't live out of her own truth, her own authenticity, until she found the Unitarian Universalist community, which embraced her as she was and honored her beauty and held her and supported her and allowed her really to be true to her reality and to live a full life. "This church saved my life," were her words. I've heard similar words from teenagers in a number of different Unitarian Universalist congregations. It's hard to be a teenager, and some of them don't fit so neatly and comfortably into the peer group in their high school and have these terrible feelings of unworthiness and can't just find a comfortable place and like the woman whose story I just told, can't be true to who they really are. And so many of these folks are taken in by youth groups, YRUU groups, in some of our Unitarian and Universalist congregations, groups that support them and accept them, and again, allow them to flourish into the true beauty of who they are. And I have heard such teenagers say, "This church saved my life." And I was reminded not too long ago that in that infamous city of Columbine, there first were three teenage boys who were drawn down into depths of darkness and who met and did their plotting and planning and fed each other in their sense of despair and depression. Three boys, one of whom, by chance, was drawn into a youth group in the local Unitarian Universalist Church and was able to be lifted out of that circle of darkness into a group that accepted him and affirmed him and found positive outlets for his energy and his talents. And so when those terrible shootings happened in the school in Columbine, there were two teenage boys, not three. For that third, the Unitarian Universalist Church had saved his life. These are powerful, powerful stories. You know in your own lives and in your own hearts the stories of this church here in Nashua and the lives it has touched and held and changed and perhaps saved. I know in some churches it's folks who may be suffering from clinical depression or some other form of mental illness, and who need just such a warm, safe circle of support that makes the difference in their lives, that tilts the balance so that they can live whole and healthy lives. Our churches save lives. But they do more than that. They also save society. My colleague Kim Beach wrote, "We too easily wrap ourselves in the cocoon of our own congregational life and forget that we are part of a world historical movement. We dwindle into coziness." I love that phrase, dwindle into coziness, and forget what brought us together in the first place, the keen sense that what we want most is to be a part of something great, an historical drama in which we are actors and everything we cherish is at stake. The church saves lives. The church has the potential to save society. It is not an exaggeration to say that in the state of Vermont, the affirmation of civil unions for gays and lesbians would not have happened were it not for the work of Unitarian Universalists. That is not an exaggeration. The people on the ground collecting the signatures and writing the letters and testifying in the legislature overwhelmingly were Unitarian Universalists. Which shouldn't be a surprise, because we have behind us several generations of really healthy sex education. We have grounding in the work of the Welcoming Congregation program. We have as our very first principle our affirmation of the inherent worth and dignity of every individual. So to be a part of this movement, bringing civil unions into the legal world, is so integrated into who we are as a faith movement. The work of the New Hampshire Faithful Democracy Program, which folks in this congregation participate in, which is described in your order of service this morning, is powerful work. A couple of years ago, as the New Hampshire Faithful Democracy Program was just emerging, the first effort had to do with voter registration. And thousands and thousands, thousands of people who had not voted and would not have voted that year were registered and empowered so that their voice was brought into the public decision making through the work of the Unitarian Universalist New Hampshire Faithful Democracy Program. And this year, as there are such critical issues, ethical, values-based issues in our New Hampshire legislature, having to do with the freedom to marry, having to do with support for health care, having to do with decisions at the end of life, issues that are so grounded in our religious values. We have the New Hampshire Faithful Democracy Program, and you're part in that, working to bring some of this legislation into a more healthy and humane place. What I want to talk about this morning is the possible expansion of our faith and what happens when we can join our energies beyond the local congregation to join with folks in neighboring congregations. What can happen for us personally and how our impact on society can be enlarged and strengthened. Mike read just a few moments ago from the most recent report of the Unitarian Universalist Association's Commission on Appraisal. A previous report that was issued 8 years ago is titled Interdependence, and it is a call for a paradigm shift in our way of being religious, away from individualism and separatism into interdependence. And relationship, not just personally, but for congregations as well. It's a call for stronger lateral relationships among our congregations, calling us out of that coziness, as Tim Beach called it. But moving out of our coziness and joining together isn't easy. I acknowledge that. I grew up in Unitarian Universalist churches. I was very active in the Sunday schools. I went every Sunday, became a teenager and was active in the youth group there. It was my circle of friends. It was my circle of support. And I rose into positions of leadership within the youth group in my local congregation. And then a time came when many of the members of that youth group began traveling to nearby cities, to what we would know as the district cons. But they were weekend conferences for teenagers from a number of congregations to gather together. And that was hard for me. I was quiet. I was shy. Except in a close, well-known group of friends, I was on the outside, watching, not participating. And to go to a strange place and be with a group of strange people was more than I could do, and I didn't. And I had excuses whenever the folks from my youth group went off to these weekend conferences. I would have a very good excuse why I couldn't go. And they would come back full of all kinds of energy and excitement and stories and new friends. And my boyfriend from my local youth group came back with a new girlfriend. The losses were real. But since that time, I've moved on in my personal life and in my professional life. And by now, I have been in dozens and dozens and dozens, maybe even hundreds, of Unitarian Universalist congregations all over New England and in Rhode Island, New York, across the seas. I served for a short time as an interim minister in Cambridge, England, which was just wonderful. And in my present position, my work is to be available to the 45 Unitarian Universalist congregations in New Hampshire and Vermont. 45 churches that are so diverse and yet have this common heart at their center. I want to tell you just a little bit about some of these other churches in New Hampshire and Vermont. Some of them are large and stately and well endowed. Our largest church is in Burlington, Vermont. It's a classic, elegant building right in the town square. And in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, our second largest congregation also is right there in the center of town and a hub of activity for cultural and social events in Portsmouth as well as for the congregation itself. And our third largest church is here in Nashua, New Hampshire. You are among the largest of these 45 churches in our two states. And far be it from me to prioritize the beauty of those 45 churches. But if I did, you would be up there towards the top. This is just a wonderful, wonderful space. But equally important in our district and in our movement are the tiny congregations. And we have many, many of them. I preached a couple of years ago to a congregation of 8 in West Chesterfield, New Hampshire, in a classic old New England structure that has no indoor plumbing, but they do have a lovely outhouse. And they are a dear, wonderful group of people, and they are a part of us. In Jericho, Vermont, just west of Burlington, there's a flourishing fellowship. They have maybe 35 or 40 members now. It's a young group. And they have been meeting for years in the music room of an elementary school. Their dream is to have their own space. And they are moving in a very strong way to fulfill that dream and to have their own space. But for now, a On Sunday mornings, they go to the local elementary school, and they set up their chairs and bring out their hymnals and their little table with a chalice on it. And when they light the chalice, they chant, a chant that probably many of you know, the earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. If I could sing it, I would sing it. It's just, it's a magical chant. And to sit in that elementary school and to hear this group of people chant those words, there is such a sense of spiritual depth. There's a magic, a haunting magic to it. They're a fabulous congregation. Our congregations are hugely diverse theologically. We have a congregation in Wilton, New Hampshire, not that far from here. Again, beautiful, classic New England structure, and a wonderful, sincere congregation. In that congregation, the Lord's Prayer is said every Sunday. There is a scripture reading almost every week. The language, the story, the imagery largely is drawn from scripture, from the teachings of Jesus. It is a true Unitarian Universalist congregation. On the other end of the spectrum, maybe congregations such as this, where I believe I am right, you might correct me later, that the prominent voice and articulation theologically is a humanist voice. Deeply thought, deeply felt, beautifully expressed. Very much a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Our theology is always in flux, and I'd like to tell you two stories of theological expression from our New Hampshire-Vermont congregation. One of them is a very historic story, and one is quite contemporary. The historic story has to do with a church in Winchester, New Hampshire, which is just south of Keene, where there's an elegant brick church right in the center of town. A church that was built as a Universalist church. A church in which, in 1803, a defining statement was crafted, a theological statement that really shaped who the Universalists were at that time. And it's curious that this was alluded to or mentioned again in the reading that Mike did a few minutes ago. The classic Winchester Profession of Faith begins with this sentence, and bear with me with the most open mind you can as you hear these words. The statement begins, "We believe that the Holy Scriptures of the Old and New Testament contain a revelation of the character of God." That is a defining statement of our faith. And let me tell you why. There was great struggle over the wording of that statement, because they're referring to the scriptures being a revelation of the character of God, not the revelation. And that was the struggle as they worked to adopt that statement. Is the Bible the religious truth, or is it a religious truth? They said it is a religious truth, and it opened that door for all of the other sources of religious truth and wisdom. It was a transforming moment in the theological history of our movement. There is an initiative at the moment to buy back that church building into our Unitarian Universalist circle and to create there a Universalist Heritage Center, where artifacts and documents can be celebrated and made available. The person chairing the committee steering that process is a man named John Sanders. Perhaps he's known to some of you. He'd probably love to tell you more about it. The other theological piece I would like to share with you is contemporary, and this comes from a meeting I attended at our church in Plymouth, New Hampshire, up closer to the mountains, a new church building, wooden structure, wonderful octagonal sanctuary with a masterful woodwork in the floor, inlay woodwork. And at a meeting there, the choir sang this piece entitled Credo Response, written by a member, composed by a member of the congregation. And the words, I think, say something wonderfully evocative about who we are theologically. These are the words. There is something beyond ourselves. There is something greater than us all, something mysterious, something divine. There is something beyond ourselves, something greater than us all, something that moves, something that binds. And we are a part of that something, part of the mystery, part of that something divine. And to know of this, and to live like this, is the greatest joy of all. I love those words. So Unitarian Universalism is alive in all its richness in New Hampshire and in Vermont, and it's alive beyond these northern New England states as well. And every June, Unitarian Universalists gather from all over the United States in our annual General Assembly. Some of you may have been at those experiences, but can you imagine the power and the joy and the wonder of singing and engaging in shared decision-making and witnessing for peace and justice with thousands and thousands and thousands of other Unitarian Universalists? It's fabulous. A member of this congregation has said that at a recent General Assembly in Boston, he was thrilled by the awe-inspiring service at what was then the Fleet Center, where I sang with 10,000 other Unitarian Universalists, thrilled by the brilliance and passion of the arguments pro and con for social justice during plenary sessions, by the friendship offered in every hallway conversation. From General Assembly, from other conferences and gatherings, New England Leadership School, Star Island Camp and Conference Center, members of this congregation have testified to the transforming personal growth that they have experienced. One person has said that at Star Island, she had leadership opportunities that challenged me to stretch beyond what I thought I could do. And a youth member of this congregation, who is a part of our district youth council and participates in planning those youth events, says that being part of the planning has helped me to gain a lot of competence and also helped me to define my own values on my journey to construct my personal spirituality. And Unitarian Universalism stretches even beyond these gatherings and beyond our own continental reality. There are Unitarian Universalist congregations in Germany, in Paris, in Amsterdam, in St. John, in the Virgin Islands, Tierra del Fuego, in India, in Auckland, New Zealand, many, many in Great Britain, hundreds and hundreds in Transylvania, where part of our history was born. Transylvania, which once was a part of Hungary and now is in Romania. One third of all the Unitarians on this planet are in Transylvania and the central regions of Romania. I would love to spend the rest of the morning talking to you about them, but that will have to wait for another time. Let me read just a couple more quotes from members of this congregation, and then we will move to closing. Our time rushes on. I hope that as you have the opportunity, you will stretch beyond these national walls and visit other congregations. Someone here has said, I have a great curiosity about and appreciation for other churches in the denomination and try to go to different ones when I am traveling if time allows. It is a way of not being so insular by only having the experience of this one congregation. And I love the way one man here said it, that when he reaches out for these other connections, he finds that there are such bright colors and fabrics in the tapestry of his life. Let me tell you a story that comes from Laurel Hallman, another of my colleagues, and then I will close with one final quote from a member of this congregation. Laurel Hallman from Dallas, Texas, tells the story of a dour, reclusive Scotsman who was not in church for many Sundays. His Presbyterian pastor went to visit him in his humble cottage. When the pastor knocked, the Scotsman opened the door and without a word motioned the pastor inside. He indicated a rocking chair in front of the coal fire for the pastor and drew up another chair for himself. In silence, the two men sat and watched the burning coals. After a time, the pastor stood up, took the fire tongs, and put one of the glowing coals to the side of the hearth. He sat down again and began to rock. Both men watched the lone coal as it grew ashen and cold. After a time, the pastor again took the tongs, picked up the dead coal, and put it back in the fire. And then he sat down, and both men watched as once again it burned brightly with the rest. Without a word, the pastor left. The next week, the old Scotsman was back in church and never missed a Sunday from that time forward. Each soul, like each coal in the fireplace, needs the community that keeps it alive. And each soul, like a coal, helps build the community that warms and sustains us all. These last words from a woman here who said, "My life has been enriched because of my connection with Unitarianism and Universalism. I have connections all over the world, and I feel more solid, not afloat in the world. I am no more than a call away from someone who can affirm me and can appreciate the way I see the world. All those connections are like lifeboats in the sea of humanity. Our churches save lives. I'm so glad you are here to be a part of one. And I look forward to seeing you out and about in the other churches of our district and beyond." Our closing hymn is number 318.